I think we've been led astray when it comes to the whole vitamin, mineral, pop a pill for an ill is the same as what's in food. That they just remove one component from food, they concentrate it, they isolate it, and it behaves essentially the same in the body because it's the same thing as what's in the whole food. You can replace what you're getting in your diet with a pill.
We'd like to introduce
Daniel Reuters to everyone. Daniel has actually spent over 10 years working as a lecturer and senior lecturer in the field of nutrition and naturopathic medicine. In late 2022, Daniel resigned from a senior academic position at an Australian university after becoming disillusioned with the curriculum he was teaching. This allowed him to focus on other projects such as his own book, Can You Catch a Cold? Untold History and Human Experiments, which was published in March of 2024. He now spends his time educating people about health and wellness and looking after after his own hobby farm.
So welcome, Daniel. We are so honored to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure to be here. I appreciate the warm introduction.
It's our pleasure and it's our honor to have you. So, you know, to begin with, what got you into this field and thinking in a very different manner or even researching about such topics? Was this something that happened or some idea? What sparked this curiosity and got you onto this path?
I've always been like this since childhood because I was sick as a child. And we went to all kinds of different practitioners and no one had an answer until I went and saw a chiropractor one day and he made some very basic dietary and lifestyle recommendations and it changed my life. So I knew from that point on that I wanted to help people and in fact always wanted to be a chiropractor, but they didn't offer that in the state I was living in. So I had to settle for naturopathy and the rest is history. I spent a lot of time educating myself in that field and then moved into the academic and clinical space. Then 2020 happened and the things that I'd been questioning prior to 2020, I felt more comfortable in talking about because many other people started to question certain things and realized that most of what I thought I knew about health and wellness was incorrect and that I really needed to look at things with a more lateral perspective and just basically throw out everything that I thought I knew and start from scratch and go right back to the foundations and build up from there. And I'm glad I did because it's changed the way I see the world and health and people and just life in general.
I really appreciate you doing that because the one thing is a lot of practitioners and people out there who get educated and then in the end when there's some idea that kind of conflicts with what they have learned, a lot of people kind of get resistant to accepting it because they feel like, oh, but I have spent so much of time doing this or that, and then I don't know. And then they kind of just say, okay, let's just ignore it for now. So it's so amazing that you just opened up and opened yourself up to learning new things and evolving.
And also at the same time, challenging the conventional system, right?
Yeah.
Because a lot of your previous podcast and a lot of your talks do shine that with a lot of vitamin supplementation, for example. Would really love to know your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think I started a lot of the work I'm doing now maybe in 2020 and was taking a very conservative approach because my position at the university, I didn't want to lose my job. And I got to the point where I thought that the truth was more important than my job. And as I started to question more things and speak out a little bit more, I got basically performance managed out. So universities aren't the places for free thinkers, even though that's what they want you to believe. And yes, supplementation is certainly one of those things. I think we've been led astray when it comes to the whole vitamin, mineral, pill, pop a pill for an ill, and you can replace what you're getting in your diet with a pill, and it's the same as what is in your food. I think we're very far removed from what's really going on when it comes to you or being so heavily reliant on supplementation. I don't think we're doing ourselves any good by getting away from the basics of nutrition.
Actually, on that note, the one thing that really resonated with me and the one thing I always kind of ponder about, we know that, you know, the food we get from nature, and you're a big proponent of it, and so am I, that nature has provided us with everything that we need. And we know that everything that comes from nature, they have, I mean, everything has light emissions, everything has energy fields. But at least the one thing we know is what comes with nature is mostly compatible with us, with our bodies, with our energetic fields. But something that's made, that's replicated from a natural substance or a herb or some food. So broadly speaking, most of the supplements in the market, especially the ones which are isolated or derived from something that's natural, lab-derived or completely lab-made or synthetic, and we consume them as vitamins, I always think, what kind of energy field do they have? What kind of biophoton light emissions do they have? How is our energetic body treating it? What's happening on the energetic level? How is the microbiome treating it? What would you talk something about if you have explored something on those lines, or what do you think about it?
Well, we're told that what exists in a pill or a powder is the same as what's in food, that they just remove one component from food, they concentrate it, they isolate it, and it behaves essentially the same in the body because it's the same thing as what's in the whole food. I'll give a little thought experiment to people so they can sort of understand the broader context of what we're talking about here. We're told that food is a combination of fats, proteins, carbohydrates, vitamins, minerals. There's all these things that go into food. And you ask a biochemist, how do you know that? And they say, well, we take the orange and we do stuff to it in a lab and we start isolating certain things out. We isolate this vitamin or this mineral or this compound or this substance. And then we can say there's 999 things in that orange. My question is to them, how do you know that what you're isolating, that what you've isolated is actually the thing that exists in the food as a whole? So let me give you an example here, because this will hopefully, it's a very complicated topic that a lot of people have trouble getting their head around. So this analogy, I think, might assist with their understanding. When you make a cake, there's a lot of different things that go into it, right? So there's like eggs and milk and cream and butter and chocolate and some flour, and you put it all in a bowl, you mix it up, and you put it into an oven, and you set it at 180 degrees on bake for an hour and a half. If you took that baked chocolate cake and you gave it to the biochemist and said, I want you to isolate now just the cream, just take the cream out from the baked cake and show me it as it existed before you put it into the cake. Do you think he could do it?
No, absolutely not.
So they can't do that, right? So if they just had a cake and you never showed them what went into it, do you think that they could isolate out the cream and the eggs and the flour and the sugar and the chocolate and then have all of the ingredients there as they were before they went into the cake?
That's impossible.
It's impossible, right?
Yeah.
So how do you know? If they did something to that cake and they said, oh yeah, I'm just going to isolate out the cream, how do you know that the cream that they've isolated isn't the same as what they put in?
Yeah.
Makes sense.
If you looked at the cream, it would be like a powder and it'd be a bit gray, but the cream that you put in was like a fluid. It was a white viscous liquid, right?
Absolutely.
So you can compare those two things and go, hang on, what you pulled out wasn't what went in.
Yeah. That's true.
So you've got a gold standard, don't you? You've got the cream as it existed before it went in. But you don't have that with food. All you've got with food is the baked cake. You don't know what went in there. So you don't have the gold standard to compare it to. Yeah. So you've got no idea that what you're actually isolating from the orange is really what went into the orange from nature. So this is a... We're very short-sighted when it comes to our thinking about food and what's actually in it. I don't think it is a combination of separate things. I actually think it's a whole thing. I don't think you can separate it.
Yeah.
And I think with that, some people have an argument. I have spoken about this. I have thrown this idea out to some people and they say, well, but I have been trying to eat the right food, although, I mean, since for almost a major part of their lives, they were eating stuff that was not compatible with the body most of the times, or they weren't eating vegetables or fruits and whatsoever. And now, like just 3-6 months down the line, they changed. And then they say, well, I haven't really found any relief, or nothing has really changed for me. So I'm taking supplements and sometimes taking supplements, they feel better. And they say, I feel better. So I start thinking, well, in my head, I'm thinking, well, maybe the quality of the fruits and vegetables, probably that's not up to the mark, or maybe their digestion, maybe there's something wrong with the absorption because of their nervous system state, or is it like the body needs more time, or maybe there are no enzymes, or is it the placebo effect when it comes to supplements? So all these kind of thoughts, they run through my mind. But what would you say, like, to someone who pulls that question up?
There's so many variables. And you've hit the nail on the head with quite a few there. One thing I would say is there are many drugs that are made by getting a plant and just extracting one substance from that plant, and you have a drug. It has a physiological effect in the body, a noticeable effect. So when you do that to a plant and you get a chemical substance and you call it a drug, how is that any different to taking an orange and pulling out just one thing, and then someone takes it and they get an effect and they go, I must have been deficient in something in the orange. Hang on a second.
Yeah.
Are we talking about an effect from a drug here, and then you're trying to compare it to the orange? So when they start taking it, they get the effect, they feel better. But then you stop taking it, and what happens? The symptoms come back.
Yeah, totally.
So how do drugs work? By masking symptoms. So how do we know that what we're taking as in a supplement, in an isolated, high concentrated dose of a vitamin or a mineral or a specific herbal compound isn't working like a drug in the body and masking symptoms?
Exactly. That's the same question I had in my head. What makes them different from drugs?
Well, in a lot of literature, in law and in pharmacology, they do consider these substances as drugs.
Wow.
I'm not saying that they are, but in depending on who you ask and what literature you read, they do classify them as drugs.
So what kind of separates them? What makes them different? So, or is this just the classification they've given it as nutraceuticals, but there's no real difference, or there's like some slight difference maybe because they say drugs have side effects? So at the same time, when I think of supplements, sure, they could be creating some kind of imbalance. Like if you take excessive zinc, you create copper imbalance. Example. So, but are they also causing side effects? It has always pondered in my head. Supplements, I mean.
Yeah, we don't know what we're doing when we're taking high doses of these things. So when you eat a food, everything that your body requires to digest, to assimilate, to utilize, to metabolize, and to excrete that food is in the food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, if you just take out some components of that and eat it, your body goes, great, we got one of the things that we need, but where's the other 999 things that were meant to come along with that vitamin C in the orange?
Yeah.
Well, it's not here. So we have to now draw it from our own reserves in our body to facilitate that entire process. So you might be drawing on other so-called nutrients and minerals and things from your own body's reserves, and over time slowly throw the balance of other things out unknowingly. Once you've done that, you're forever chasing your tail trying to correct these deficiencies or insufficiencies that you may have caused by taking an isolated high dose of something. Again, like, these are very abstract concepts for a lot of people. So let me give you an analogy here.
Yes, please.
Have you ever looked in the back of a watch before and you see all the little cogs in there? If you walked up to a watchmaker and said, watchmaker, can you point to the cog? There's like 100 cogs in that watch. Point to the one that's doing all the work. What's he going to say? It's all of the cogs. So you can't pull one cog out and go and put it in the back of another watch that has no cogs and expect the time to be kept, can you? No. So you can't isolate one thing from a whole and put it in isolation and expect it to work. Much like you can't take one thing out of the whole if you need 100 cogs for the watch to work and you take one out, the other 99 aren't going to work because you need 100 of them. So this is a concept known as synergy, food synergy, that the matrix of food, where everything is being put into the food by Mother Nature in the exact precise quantities, concentrations and ratios for it to work and interface with your body perfectly. But when we start mucking around and going, oh, what's that? It's you take an orange to a biochemist and say, Mr. Biochemist, what's the thing in this orange that's doing the work? Well, you see this one right here, this vitamin C, that's the thing. So we'll just pull that out and put it in a bottle and give it to you.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't work like
that. Absolutely. And so...
So on that point, actually, I want to ask you about this one controversy that you've actually picked up, which is on vitamin D supplementation. So is it something you completely deny its use, or you do say, okay, there is some level of vitamin D supplement that we can actually take and ingest and it's fine during an acute illness or something?
Yeah, it's another great question. We used to think that vitamin D was the substance doing all the hard work in the body. So you get someone with the disease, you do a blood test and you'd see that there's low vitamin D and you go, that's the reason why you're sick. Now what they've realized is that it's not the vitamin D. It's actually, vitamin D is what they call a proxy marker, a surrogate marker for sun exposure. So it's actually the sun that does the hard work. It's the sun that gives you all the benefit. And the vitamin D is the evidence that you were exposed to the sun. So think of it like, you guys might have heard me use this example before. Think of it like going camping and you have a fire. And when that fire burns out, there's ash on the ground. Now, the fire is the thing that you can cook your dinner on. It keeps you warm at night. But you wake up the next morning, there's a pile of ash on the ground. Can you take that ash, put it in a glass jar, and then later on that night, sprinkle the ash around and huddle around it and keep warm and cook your food on it? No, because the ash is the evidence that there was a fire there. So what you can draw an analogy between the fire is with the sun. And then draw the analogy between the ash and the vitamin D. It is just the evidence that there was a fire there, and the vitamin D is just the evidence that you're exposed to the sun. It's the penetration of the full spectrum of light into your body, which has all the effects. That's it. When you can walk outside and get it for free, you know, you don't have to, you don't have to be popping all these pills and potions to get things that nature provides us.
So a quick question. In the summer, of course, there's no issue with the amount of sun that we can, you know, the sunlight that we can receive. But in winters, it's generally a problem because we are covered and the amount of sunlight is very low. So in that case, can we have practices like keeping a bottle of olive oil in the sunlight for about 20 minutes, direct sunlight, so it kind of captures the energy or the essence that kind of... Can that, something like that, help with the vitamin D? Because I think there was one study that you came across or one of your teachers.
Yeah, it happened with one of my professors that her markers with vitamin D were really low. But when she started having bacon again in her diet, even though her cholesterol was high, she said, you know, I'll just give it a try and see what happens. And she started having bacon and she started feeling better. Not that her results were great in the lab reports, but she started feeling better. She felt like she had an immunity now, resistance towards any kind of viruses or whatever in the winter time. And that was something that really hit hard on me that, okay, it's the food at the end of the day and the food that we are getting through, like, because of the sun and the animals and the way they are brought up. It's all in a very healthy environment. And they are getting full spectrum of the sun. And then hence we are having that. Or even fruits or vegetables.
Yeah, I think you really hit on an important point there. Is it capturing the essence or the energy from the sun in the food? I mean, I don't know how we'd go about proving that. I think that's probably closer to what happens than this idea that it's, you know, a vitamin, like this vitamin D concept. Yeah, is when the animal or the food or the fruit or the plant or whatever exposed to the sunlight that it does something to the plant or animal matter, and we eat that and we absorb the essence or the energy?
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know how to prove that, but I think it's possible. I mean, once upon a time, because people say this, how do I get vitamin D in the winter?
Yeah.
Well, once upon a time, what did we use at night to keep predators away and to create light and to create warmth? What did we, almost fire. Every single native tribe use?
Just fire.
Fire.
Yeah.
Why do we have such a relationship with it? Have you ever been around a fire and you just sit there and you can just literally watch it for hours, right? What's all that about? Why do we have this? What else can you just sit and watch like that for hours on end and just be completely fascinated by? I don't know anything really, but there's some suggestions that maybe the radiant heat or the spectrum of light coming up from fire might be absorbed by the human body and have a similar effect inside us that might be able to maintain our so-called vitamin D levels and get us through the winter period so we don't become deficient, for lack of a better term, in this so-called vitamin D. So is it like because we're not getting vitamin D, or is it because we've changed our lifestyles so much away from how we used to traditionally live that we've got a deficiency of fire in the wintertime? You know, we all always used to have fireplaces in our homes.
Yeah,
but we don't have this anymore. Now we've got electric heating and we've got artificial lighting and all this kind of stuff that we have no need for fireplaces anymore. So, yeah. I mean, that may be an essential element that we're lacking in these colder climates that we just take for granted and think that it's not really that important anymore.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and also with unnatural lights, with LEDs, we're also disrupting our melatonin. So it's a whole other cycle that's been going on. So what are some of the strategies? Or is just to spend time under the sun? Or what do you think, what other things can we do to get our vitamin D levels high?
Sunlight. I mean, that's the once upon a time we just used to exist outside. We were just outside, like you didn't have any other option.
Yeah.
Because that's where you lived.
Yeah.
You were outside.
Yeah.
Or maybe you take some shade under a tree or under a bit of a rocky outcrop or something like this. But you were always outside.
Yeah.
So we never used to have problems with vitamin D. Vitamin D or the effects from the sun.
Yeah. Actually.
A sunlight deficiency. But these days, I mean, you've got to tell people to do as much as they can with their diet and with their lifestyle to just get half an hour in the sun. They go, oh, half an hour, yeah, that's a long time. How am I going to get that much time outside? So that in and of itself, just getting out in the sunlight, I think would go a long way in solving a lot of people's issues with this whole vitamin D issue. But then also consuming foods that contain so-called vitamin D in the wintertime. These more fatty type of foods, which people in colder climates used to do.
Yeah.
We don't do that so much anymore. And then there's things like fire as well, as we just discussed. Maybe that plays a role. Again, there might also be other factors at play here, which is causing disruption to our system, which we're blaming on a vitamin D deficiency and a sunlight deficiency, but actually might be caused by something else. Like, as you mentioned before, exposure to synthetic and artificial light.
Yeah.
Right? How do you know if you don't take that out of the equation, now all of a sudden there's no issues with the whole vitamin D thing? It just sort of, there's no problems anymore. We don't know what effects these things we're being exposed to, these unnatural sources of light, are actually having on our body. And then we only ever really think about the sun, but that's not the only light in the sky.
Yeah.
And because of that, I think in Ayurveda, they also, we revere sun a lot. And we, as a veneration, we offer water in the morning. And through that spectrum of light, the morning, the sun, and that spectrum of light that comes through that water to us, that's medicine in itself.
Yeah, so, we don't know what happens when with these wavelengths of light that are penetrating through the atmosphere, through water vapor and all these different gases and things. We don't know. We have no comprehension on how it all works. I mean, we used to sleep out underneath the stars and the moon, and we don't do that anymore. So when was the last, how do you know that it's not a moonlight deficiency that you're experiencing? Like,
that's a very good question.
We only focus on the sun as if that's the be all and end all, but we just pay no other attention to any of the so-called cosmic rays that are coming down from all these other sources of light in the sky, whatever they might be up there, and their effects on human health. I mean,
you're absolutely right. I'll give you an example which just comes to my mind. When we were working in our company, Natural Dyed T-shirts, so the blue color, there were indigo vats that were made. They were fermented. And what used to happen was, this is in relation to the phases of the moon. I think it used to affect the females' menses, and somehow the females who were actually dyeing the T-shirts in the vat, indigo vat, something was going wrong with the fermentation. And it was so crazy, they couldn't really figure out what's happening. And then suddenly, okay, then they figured out this relation. Okay, maybe if they can not have the females do the dyeing in the indigo vats, although they're just dipping their hands and dyeing the T-shirts, right? But the moment the females were removed, only during that period when they had the menses.
I think it's the pheromones that gets transferred onto the dye. So, which was, I think, sort of disrupting the maturation of the dye or something of that sort, yeah.
So, meaning to say, there was so much happening, like, energetically. On and so forth. It's like mind-boggling at that point. Now that you mention it, just comes to my mind, yeah, like the effects of the moon.
During the full moon, you'll have the parasites coming out, and you'll feel a bit of GI discomfort at night. So I know for a fact that we all are in relationship to nature in such an intimate way that we just can't be disconnected, and yet we are so disconnected from it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people will be surprised to hear this, but there are many people assume that disease is just a part of life, that we're all destined for disease, that when you're born one day, inevitably, you are just going to end up with arthritis or cancer or diabetes or obesity or cardiovascular disease or depression. You're going to get something.
Yeah.
But that's actually not the default human state. You know, the default human state is health. Now, how do I know that? Because thankfully, there were some really astute doctors and anthropologists who wondered, I wonder how the people living out in nature who don't have any connection with the outside world are surviving. I mean, how do they get healthy? Because they don't have hospitals and drugs and surgeries and doctors and dentists. I mean, they must be a complete mess. Well, we better go out and do some studies on them. When they went out and studied all different cultures and tribes and native people from across the world, they found one thing in common across all of them. They were free from chronic illness. They didn't have any of these chronic diseases. And in fact, I mean, a lot of them, if they lived past like 12 years of age, would live into their 70s, often to their 90s, free from disease, completely healthy. And they might just have like one or two days at the end of their life where they just decline in health and they pass away from old age, and that's it.
Yeah.
But compare that to how we are in the West, where according to a Lancet study, 97% of all people have one disease, right?
Yeah.
All, like basically the whole population is sick. But we've got evidence from all these tribes that had no illness. So how come they were all healthy and we're all sick? Well, you can compare how they were living, what they were eating, what they were thinking, and compare it to what we're doing.
Yeah.
And you can see some major disconnections there. So maybe our ancestors weren't so as dumb as we think that they were, right?
Yeah, totally. I think they were more advanced than us.
Yeah, they're more connected, and I think that's what we need to do. And so on that note, could you tell us, based on your research and your work, what have you uncovered are the root causes of our chronic illnesses, or that prevents the nervous system from shifting into a parasympathetic mode, and so that we can thrive and the body can regenerate itself? There's something stopping us. So what, according to you, are the root causes?
We're not living how we should be living. We're not we're living in captivity.
Yeah.
Western modern lifestyles, this world, this, they call it modernity, essentially. The modern society that we're in is like being in captivity. And you can't be well in captivity because you're disconnected from all the things that you need to be whole, to be complete, to be healthy. Right. Once you start removing one of those things, there's going to be dis-ease. So what are the things? Well, it's not eating a proper natural diet, food that is local, seasonal, fresh, not sprayed with poison, that you can go out and gather and hunt for yourself, prepare yourself with the people that you love and care about, enjoyed with the people that you love and care about, and you pay respect to the food and you're connected that way. You're constantly connected to the earth. Like, you're not walking around in synthetic soled shoes disconnected from the earth. You're out in the sunlight. You're out in the fresh air. You're constantly observing nature, green plants and things. I mean, they've done some pretty interesting studies on that, but constantly moving your body. You're outside, you're running, you're moving, you're climbing a tree, you're running after this thing, you're running away from that thing, you're swimming, you're whatever it is that you're doing. You're going to bed when the sun goes down. You're getting up when the sun comes up. I mean, you just think about how we used to live when they were healthy, and you try and replicate that. And that's essentially what we need to do to have good health. But I mean, there's all those really simple things, but then there's also the exposure to toxins and poisons and non-native electromagnetic frequencies and a lack of meaning and purpose in our life. I mean, the list goes on. But I think it's relatively simple to understand why we're sick, but it's not necessarily easy for us to change society in a way to get us back to a state where we're living in harmony with nature. It's like we are a part of nature. It's we're not separate to it. So you can only be as healthy as the environment that you're existing in. And a Western toxic, broken, sick, dysfunctional Western society is not a healthy one. So you can only be as healthy as it.
Absolutely. So one of the things in the things that you mentioned, the one thing I find interesting and I feel is also very much responsible for us being in a disease state is trauma and emotions, unprocessed emotions, and perhaps even ancestral trauma. And a lot of people have questions about how can we work on that? What can we do?
Yeah, I mean, this might not sit well with a lot of people, but I'm not convinced that it's the so-called trauma that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because people point to trauma and say, I had an experience in my life and that's the thing that made me sick, a negative experience. But look at all the native people. They weren't walking around with cancer. They weren't walking around with any disease. But I guarantee you, living in nature's hard and there's stuff that happens that you're going to have to deal with. So they were still exposed to so-called traumatic events, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's something going on there which is causing, again, a disconnect. It's disrupting the normal physiological function of the body to allow it to process all the information that comes in each day. So hear me out on this one. This is just a theory. I don't claim it to be true. There's the so-called emotional processing part of the brain called the amygdala. So every night when you go to sleep, all the information that comes that came in that day, your brain just like processes like a computer. It chucks out all the stuff that it doesn't need and it keeps the important bits of information that it's required to keep you surviving in nature. However, exposure to artificial synthetic light disrupts that process. It throws out your circadian rhythm and it throws out the ability for the part of the brain, the emotional processing part of the brain, to work as it needs to do. So it can't do its job properly because it's being negatively impacted by an outside factor, an outside force, which is this synthetic light.
Yeah.
So is it the trauma or is it the synthetic light, which is the problem? So what I'm saying is if we focus on the trauma, we're chasing a red herring. We're focusing on the wrong thing when it could be the fact I'm sitting inside all day and it's throwing these little intricate processes that would otherwise be keeping me in a state of equilibrium out of balance.
So do you think practices like wearing those amber-colored glasses after sunset and having not the LED lights, but the incandescent bulbs, which are placed below eye level, these kind of practices can actually...
And also with grounding mats.
Grounding mats. Can these solve the problem for someone living in for us who, we live in a modern world. So can that resolve that issue?
It's a great question. I don't know.
Mm.
However, you mentioned grounding mats.
Yeah.
So there was a study that was done in the 60s where they put a bunch of men in an underground bunker and they shielded them from the natural frequencies of the earth, the Schumann resonances and these kinds of things. Okay. And they had another bunker where they didn't shield them. Now they were underground. They couldn't see the sun. They had no concept of the day, time, like what time it was, whatever. The men who were shielded from the electromagnetic frequencies of the earth, their circadian rhythm was completely thrown out of whack. They had no idea what time of day or night it was. They were going to bed at all kinds of different times and waking up at different times. They were getting migraine headaches. They were getting emotional disturbances. The guys in the bunker that weren't shielded kept perfect circadian rhythm. So they were going to bed when the sun was going down. They were getting up when the sun was coming up. They weren't getting migraine headaches and they weren't experiencing emotional disturbances. So we're all walking around basically insulated from the earth all day. And we're sitting inside rooms like this, completely disconnected from the outside world. Is me insulating myself from the ground, from the natural frequencies and energies from the earth, disrupting something inside me, which prevents me from processing the emotions that come in every day? I just think we're really short-sighted by pointing to the emotion and not thinking about how all these other factors in our environment, our artificial environment, are influencing us.
That makes total sense. And with that also, now I'd like to, if you can just discuss more about the misconception that people have, and the one topic that you've really touched upon wonderfully, even with your book, is about the virology part, the viral part. When people are afraid of catching something.
Yeah. The theory goes that when you come in contact with a sick person, they'll transmit their illness to you and you'll catch something from them. Now, the whole premise of the book is looking at that claim and saying, that should be a really simple thing to prove. A bunch of sick people, you get a bunch of healthy people, you put them in a room together and you see what happens. Now, just so turns out that they've done that. They've done it dozens and dozens and dozens of times for all kinds of so-called contagious diseases. And you know what happens when they put the sick people and the healthy people together? Nothing. The healthy people don't get sick. So that really throws a spanner in the works for this sort of conventional idea that illness is transferred from a sick person to a healthy person. But you know what's really interesting is that they've done experiments that look at the effects of the power of belief and so-called contagion. So you're told from a very early age, as a child, if you see someone coughing and sneezing, don't go near them because they're going to make you sick. And you get told by mum or dad or from the doctor or the teacher, and you believe them. And then one day you get sick and you went, oh yeah, that must mean because I saw a guy coughing on the street, or I was in class with my friend Johnny and he was coughing. Oh, I must have caught it off him. So it confirms your belief that you caught something. Now, what they've done, if that belief is strong enough and you believe it wholeheartedly, There's not a shadow of a doubt in your mind that that is how the world works. The power of belief can basically cause all kinds of diseases, really. I mean, they've done this with like chemotherapy, where they've told people, we're going to give you chemotherapy, and their hair falls out and they start vomiting and they get all the symptoms of chemotherapy exposure, but it turns out they just gave them salt water, right? Now, the same thing's been done with the cold and flu. So they've done experiments where they've said to people, they take some people, they put them in a room, and they say, right, we're going to expose you to the flu germs now. We're going to give you the virus. And they spray the thing in their face.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, you're giving me the flu germs. They say, stay in this room, and we're going to watch you overnight. You can just sleep there, and we'll come and get you in the morning. And they start coughing and sneezing, and they're shivering, and, oh, my God, I've got a flu. And the next morning, the nurse comes in and says, April Fools, we just gave you salt water. We didn't actually give you a flu. And within 15 minutes, their symptoms go away. So there was no virus required. It was simply this sort of belief system, this expectation in the story that I was told, that when I get exposed to flu germs, I'm going to get sick.
Mm.
But it doesn't work the way that we think it does. So, I mean, this is just a couple of examples about the things that are sort of contradictory with this story that we're told about contagion. There's obviously much, much more. I mean, it's a pretty thick book, but this sort of just gives it a bit of a general overview.
And also touching upon EBV, they are saying that a lot of us walk around with the activation of the EBV virus in our DNA that is wreaking a lot of havoc inside our bodies.
You know, they've done these kinds of experiments with EBV too, where they've done over 70. So I found some systematic reviews where they basically looked at all the research where they took healthy people and exposed them to the bodily fluids of people with EBV, and they followed them for years. And guess what? They never got sick. They were perfectly healthy for many years. Mm-hmm. Nothing ever happened. So, I mean, that's not what we're told. You're told that if you get exposed to these things, you get like infectious mononucleosis, and you get chronic fatigue, and you get all these kinds of illnesses associated with exposure to this virus. But they've never been able to demonstrate it in reality. You know, one thing that's really interesting is that they've also shown many instances of people getting sick with the same symptoms at the same time, one after another, in the same location and time proximity. And they chalked it, they went and investigated, they couldn't find a germ, and they chalked it up to this thing known as mass hysteria or social contagion. And I mean, the examples are really quite perplexing. I mean, one was of a school, an all-girls school in Tanzania, and they started getting so-called laughing disease. So they were laughing themselves sick. They could not stop laughing for days, sometimes weeks on end. So they closed the school down, and they sent all the children back to all their different villages all over Africa. And when they went to their village, guess what happened? All the villagers start getting laughing disease. And now that lasted for years. Thousands of people got affected. I mean, what sort of virus is causing laughing disease?
Exactly.
It's no virus. This is the same as like contagious anger or contagious laughter or contagious sneezing or itching or sadness. Or, I mean, there's all these emotions and behaviors and types of things which we consider infect or contagious. But there's no yawning virus. There's no sneezing virus. There's no itching virus. So there's something else going on that's independent of an actual physical particle getting transferred between people.
Hmm. That is really, really interesting. So meaning to say that if we are just in rhythm with nature, and if we, the more we can come close to living the way we used to live like 100, 200, 300 years ago, that means most of the chronic symptoms might start resolving themselves, like the body will start shifting into a state where it starts regenerating and jumping back to its default state.
Yep, because that's what the body wants to do. The body just wants to be in a state of homeostasis or balance. So when you give it the raw materials, it will do that.
But what about the toxins that have already accumulated in the body? And a lot of times, even in there are researches and in functional medicine, they say, well, the body has already been affected and these systems don't work any well. Like how the internal systems are not working the way they are used to. Yeah. The enzymes are not doing their thing. The cells are in very destructive and bad shape. Then how do you... Does just going back to nature help just by eating foods and just by going back to the rhythm of life the way it's supposed to? Or are there detoxification processes or things that we need to do to kind of...
Yeah, you know? Basically something that's more heroic at the moment because it's so cute and it's really damaging you. And or is it something like, you know, we just follow the rhythm? But for many people, I've also heard this that, you know, they've done this certain thing and it's not working. Yeah. It's just not working for them. So why so much of difference between people's experiences?
That's a lot to unpack.
Yeah.
There's two sort of things that come to my mind immediately. Mm-hmm. So the first one was about the toxins. And do we have to, I mean, we're living in a very toxic society. So it stands to reason that we would need to take heroic measures to deal with those things that we're being exposed to. So that might be like chelation therapy or using certain binders or things that are going to help detox the body. So I think those things can be used judiciously, but that's only really putting a Band-Aid on an arterial bleed. It's just like we're going to continue living in this toxic, broken society in this modern world, but we can detox our soul from all the poison and I'll just get exposed to more poison tomorrow. That's right, I'll just do more detox. So you're just continually like chasing your tail. But I will say this, you know how they say like sauna is really good for detoxing?
Yeah.
Because it like pushes stuff out through the skin and the sweat. And if you go and do these saunas 2-3 times a week, they've actually done some studies where they've measured like pesticide levels and forever chemical levels in people's sweat when they go into a sauna. They've done these studies. But you know, it's really interesting because people say, there's no saunas in nature. So just going back to nature, not going to get that stuff out of you. Do you know they've done studies where they've got people to do a certain level of exercise and to raise their heart rate to a certain level and to sweat to a certain extent? And they collected their sweat and they measured the levels of all those toxins and poisons that are coming out of their system. And do you know what happened? More came out of them than if they were sitting in a sauna.
Yeah.
Right.
Right? Because when you're sitting in a sauna, you're not moving your body.
Exactly. No.
And the lymphatic system is the thing that gets all the stuff out of your body. How does the lymphatic system move? When you move.
Exactly.
So if you're up exercising, you're now moving your lymphatic system more, you're sweating more, and the body's just purging all that stuff out of it. But I mean, you might get so sick that you can't exercise. So maybe you do need to do a sauna, or maybe you do need to take a pill that's going to help to chelate some of that stuff out of your body. So there's that side of things. But then there's also this other really interesting side of things where there have been reports in the medical literature of people with so-called incurable conditions, like literally days from dying, that they're that sick. They've got these incurable stage 4 cancers and the doctors say, you know what? You've got like a week to live. Literally, there's one case, this guy's got orange-sized tumors all over his body. Physically, you can actually physically see these tumors. And in one particular case, this guy heard on the radio that there was a miracle cure for the kind of cancer that he had. So he got it. He told his doctors, I want this drug. Give it to me. They gave it to him. His tumors literally just shrink away to nothing. He goes, oh my God, this is a miracle drug. Anyway, he hears about a month or two later on the radio, that drug's useless, doesn't work. His tumors come back with a vengeance and his doctors go, all right, this is really serious now. You've literally got days to live. So his doctors decided to do an experiment on this guy because they figured, look, we have nothing to lose here. We're going to lie to him. And we're going to tell him that we've got this new experimental drug, super high strength, and it is the cure for your disease. It's a specific tailored drug, and it's looking really promising. and we've got the super high dose here for you. And they start injecting him with it, and it, literally his tumors just start shrinking away, and he's cancer-free within like the matter of days to weeks. They injected him with salt water. Now, he didn't change his diet. He didn't change his lifestyle. He didn't exercise more. He didn't go to bed earlier. He didn't do any of the stuff that we would say for a person who wants to get healthy to do.
Yeah.
All he did was change his belief system.
Exactly.
He convinced himself that he was getting the cure, and he healed himself with the power of his mind.
Yeah.
So do we even need this stuff to detox? I don't know.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
So then at the end, what I can make out of it is that it's the victim mentality many a times that we have with any kind of disease is it's our own thinking, our own mindset that's blocking our own healing. Yeah.
It's our minds. I think it's a combination of everything.
Yeah.
So what I think might happen is when we get exposed to certain things,
yeah.
or we don't get exposure to certain things like sunlight and love and the earth and fresh air, or we get exposed to poisons and whatever, that can cause disease. But is it possible that you can undo all of the negative effects from those things with this?
Yeah.
So you don't have to go and change all the food and the lifestyle to heal yourself. But I mean, if you continue doing those things, you're going to end back up with a disease, and then you're going to have to use this again to get yourself out of the same problem, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, quite often people will smoke and drink alcohol and eat the wrong things and refuse to exercise and all that kind of thing because they don't love themselves, right? So there's like this lack of self-love and these destructive behaviors, and I don't believe I'm good enough, and I don't believe I'm deserving of good health, and I don't believe I'm, it's like a belief system. But the story that you tell yourself is important.
Yeah.
Now, what are we told about in relation to all of these so-called chronic health conditions that then are incurable? Yeah. So you tell the entire population that and they believe it? Well, maybe it's just now a self-fulfilling prophecy that no one believes that they're capable of healing. And that it's just a fact of life. And when you get sick, you manage it with drugs, that becomes your belief system. Well, that's the way the world goes.
Yeah. And then the alternative medical system becomes they become the irregulars in the society, right? Because then it's really hard to shift that mindset that people have already set for themselves. And even the clients that do come to us, I think they just come to prove a point that it's not going to work for them. Natural healing is not going to work for them. So it was just to prove to themselves. And I think that's something we really need to shift. And I think the mindset is the most powerful thing, as you said. The power.
Yeah, it's incredibly powerful.
Yeah.
It's. I mean, this is the power of placebo and nocebo.
Yeah.
This is. There is so much to this. I mean, you can have a person doing all the right things, but if they don't believe that it's going to help them, if they don't believe that they're going to get healthy, is it going to work? Or do you need to be completely aligned? It's like, I believe that I'm going to heal myself. I know that I'm capable of doing so, and I'm going to do it. So now you've got this in alignment with your heart. Your heart and mind are aligned, and now you've aligned it with your body, and you have complete and utter faith and belief that it's going to happen, and nothing can hold you back. And then you start moving like more congruently with your diet and with your lifestyle, and you're doing things that are more conducive to health.
Right.
But if you don't have all those things aligned, is it going
to work? I'm listening to this podcast right now wondering, I'm ready. I'm ready to change my beliefs, and I'm telling myself that I'm healthy and great things are going to happen to me and I know I can heal, et cetera, et cetera. But why is it still not working? Of course, because it's embedded in our subconscious. So what would you recommend, in your eyes, a good way, a good method for people to use to start shifting their belief systems?
Yeah, you have to do the inner work. Now, people hear this and go, oh, the inner work,
Yeah.
What's all this nonsense?
Yeah.
If you want to get big muscles, you got to go to the gym.
Yeah.
Can you sit at home doing no exercise and expect to get big muscles?
Not at all.
No.
So the inner work is the same thing. You've got to put the effort in to change the story that you're telling yourself. So most people spend their day in a negative mindset. They're actually doing negative affirmations all day.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Right.
And they focus on the bad things. They're living in they're dwelling on things in the past. They're worrying about things that might happen in the future. And they're very rarely in the present moment. So when you bring yourself back to the present moment, you take yourself out of that fight or flight state, which is essentially the stress response. Yeah.
That's true.
But you've got to work on that. Yeah. So what you can do is, like, every time you find your mind thinking about something negative that happened in the past, or you're worrying about something in the future that hasn't happened yet, you catch yourself, go, no, okay, I'm bringing my mind back to the present moment. And you want to attach to, like, a higher emotion. Because when you're in the past or the future, you're in, like, a lower emotional state of fear or anxiety. You're in this threat type state, right? One of the best ways to bring yourself back to the moment, which is the only time that exists, is right now.
Yeah.
Is to go to a state of gratitude. And to do that is to do something very simple, like being grateful for your heartbeat, being grateful for your breath. Like, you can literally focus on your heart and go, you know what? I'm so grateful that this whole time I've been sitting here, my wonderful heart has just been pumping blood through my body. And my lungs have been breathing and keeping me alive. Wow, it's so fascinating. Thank you, body. I love you. When you do that, when you're doing that practice, you're in a state of gratitude, one of the highest emotions. But now in the moment, you've moved yourself out of the past and out of the future. And if you find that you do that over and over and over again, you might need to catch yourself 10 times a day, 20 times a day, 30 times a day. Over time, you will bring yourself into alignment with the present moment in a state of gratitude. So you'll literally walk through your life in this elevated state. And when you're in that state, anything is possible. Everything is possible.
Yeah.
But when you're worrying about something that happened 20 years ago and, oh, she said this or he did this or this happened, you're stuck there. And if someone says to you, you know, you can heal, they're going to say, what are you talking about? This thing happened to me 20 years ago. I'm still not over it, right? Like, you got to do the inner work.
Right. So aside from the inner work, okay, let's say the person starts doing the inner work and let's say someone is in a state where, like, they're diabetic and they've gone through a heart condition and a lot is going on in their case, and now they are being told by experts and doctors, you can have fruits, and if they have certain vegetables, they feel bloated. And then they're wondering, half of the things I'm trying to eat from nature are not suiting me. Or perhaps if I eat fruits, it'll bump up my blood sugar levels. What am I supposed to do? Like, how am I supposed to get back to that, to be more aligned with my way of eating, my nutrition and my lifestyle?
You know, every single person is going to be different. So I can't give sort of specific recommendations. But I think we're more intelligent than we give ourselves credit for.
Yeah.
I think that we have the answer inside of us.
Absolutely.
We've got a little inner guiding voice, a little inner guiding compass that knows exactly what you need to do. Mm-hmm. And that little voice is in there. It's there. It's always there. It's always been there. It always will be there. But you see, we let that monkey brain, that inner monologue, of self-doubt and fear and this sort of, it is the subconscious mind, essentially. It's just there rattling away and it drowns out that little inner guiding compass.
Yeah.
So when you can bring your mind back to the moment and you can go into a state of focus, which is like essentially becoming conscious. This is all about like consciousness work, right?
Absolutely.
Which is essentially bringing yourself into the now. You're quiet, you're focused, you're in a state of essentially peace. And you sit somewhere, maybe under a tree outside, and you quieten down that brain and you ask yourself the question, what's the first thing I need to do? And that little voice inside will say, this thing.
Yeah.
Or it might just be a feeling. And you go, right, I'm going to go and act on what my body's telling me that it needs to do. And maybe start there. And I'm not saying that if it like tells you to go and do something like harmful to your body, like don't act upon that, right? I'm talking about like a positive thing that's going to help your health.
Like separating
the discern that for yourself. Yeah. Like what's positive and what's negative? Because I think your own higher self would never give you something that's negative to you. There are always solutions out there, and you get it via dreams, you get it via just being in the moment. So this is something that also happened to me. So I can totally understand. Yeah.
You know, I'm really so glad to hear these things from you, because it just reaffirms that, you know, the kind of shift that once again I made in my life and career, like starting off from functional medicine, putting so much of time and effort and money into studying those things. And then suddenly one day I say, nothing is really resonating. And then I completely shifted my direction and like working as a mind expansion coach and inner wealth mentor, just like as you said, the answers are within. And now I'm completely working with people on the same things, you know, belief systems and higher self and cultivating that inner confidence and shifting and tapping into that inner wealth and shifting your beliefs and trying to be more in alignment with your essence. And this is so fantastic. And I just feel so, you know, just listening this from you, it feels like really affirms that I am on the right path.
Yeah.
And I think the path that I want to go from here is like exploring, as she said, lucid dreaming, things like are the innate abilities, like, you know, psionics, they call it, or psi. And that's the reason also why I said wellness and beyond, because I had a feeling there is more to the picture.
It's not just the diet. It's not just the lifestyle. It's your power of belief, as you mentioned before, as well as your inner guidance, your inner compass. And we forget that we are also very intuitive, and because it's been layered with so much of conditioning since childhood. And we are not meant to believe strangers. We are not meant to believe people who are outside of a society, or we are not meant to challenge the mainstream.
Yeah.
So all these things, I think it's really layered our own essence and our own true voice, which we are meant to speak out. And yeah.
Yeah, we've become disconnected from who we are.
Yeah.
And who we are, and I don't know if you want to get into this conversation because it's pretty deep, but yeah, everything that we're exposed to in this world is a distraction, and it's designed to keep you from realizing your true potential and your true power and who or what it is that is inside you that is aware that you are aware, awareness and consciousness. And when you connect with that, it's really puts all this sort of stuff that we're talking about into perspective, and it makes you completely reevaluate your whole existence. And yeah, what we're here to do.
I think you reach salvation. That's the end point.
Or maybe that's the reason why we came here, to realize that.
Yeah, they call it like Valhalla or Nirvana, or some people call it heaven. Some people call it source. There's all kinds of words for it. But that's the state inside all of us that we can reach when we become fully conscious. That is consciousness. But you see, I think like we've been put into this place. I don't know. Maybe we put ourselves here to have an experience of everything that we're not. So I think possibly like the thing that is aware that you're aware, yeah, consciousness,
yeah,
is everything. It is complete. It is whole. It is one. It is source. People use all kinds of names for it now. If that is what you really are and you always exist in that form, maybe you want to have an experience that is everything that you're not. You want to experience what it feels like to be separated. You want to feel like what it's like to be incomplete. You want to feel all these different emotions. you don't want to have, you want to be able to experience all these different things. So if you are everything, I'm not saying that we are, but maybe we are. If we're everything, how would you create a place and what would you need to do to make yourself forget that you are everything?
Absolutely. By being,
you would create this place. You would create this place and you'd put a little radio in there with you to go, to keep you distracted. So you focus on the radio and you never realize that you're not the radio. You're the thing that's listening to the radio, which is everything. Yeah. And that's why it's really important if you want to reach that state, is to quieten the mind and to bring yourself back to the moment and to do meditation, these kinds of mindfulness practices. Because when you get there, it's life-changing. Now, I'll just say this last thing and hand it back to you guys. When you're in that state, you're in a state of bliss. You're in a state of nirvana. You're in a state of heaven. Now, I've only gotten there a few times and I'm desperate to get back, but I think because I want it so bad, I can't get back. But I think that's our default state. So when you go outside into nature and you are just present and you're not thinking about the past, and you're not thinking about the future, and you're just observing everything that's going on and you're just in the now, you're fully aligned. So you move into that state of bliss, of pure love, of heaven. So that's the default human state. Now, if that's not so good to have people realizing that and walking around in this world, it's not so good for a system that prides itself on materialism, that prides itself on, you know, working your way up a corporate ladder.
Yeah.
You can't have a monetary, a financial system and give that to people who are whole and complete. You can't put a gun into someone's hand and say, you see that guy over there from any other country? I want you to go and shoot him because he's from a different country. And then you start wars and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
You can't do any of that when people are fully connected with who they are. So, I mean, there's all the distractions that happen to prevent us from realizing that. And if we're doing that to ourselves, I mean, we've done a pretty good job, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure that now we are coming to a point where a lot of us are awakening, and at least we have that we are speaking about these things and it's got to be shared with the world. And I think these things wouldn't have been possible in the past. So I'm sure that we are making good development by discussing these things. With that, I have one last thing that I just want to ask you. Have you ever, have you come across in your work and in the process of writing a book, like stories or like real life stories or anecdotes where people have really just worked on, done the things that we just discussed today and really managed to regenerate their bodies?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, absolutely. You're the living example.
Yeah, yeah, I did. I had a shopping list of conditions as long as your arm, of all these different things. And just with simple dietary and lifestyle changes, I'm basically 95. I've got like one thing, one thing that I'm just really stubborn that I'm working on. But yeah, I'm a living, breathing example of that. Yeah, from a place of basically wanting to leave this realm like 6 years ago. Like, I don't think there's many people that get as low as I do and stick around to tell the story. I think they just like check out of this place, right? Yeah. But I brought myself back from like the lowest of the low, from being an alcoholic, drug addict, low life, no hoper, who had all these health problems, and I was depressed and I was anxious and suicidal. And I turned it all around, not with any fancy pill, potion, treatment, intervention. It was all just these basic things that I'm talking about. Now, it took time to get there, but, you know, as I said, I'm 95% there. But I mean, that's an anecdote. That's just my single example. There are actually studies that have been done where they've taken, like they did a study in Australia, right? Because we've got the native Australians here. And this group of men had cardiovascular disease, diabetes, overweight. And they said, right, we want to take you guys and we want to go and put you out in the bush and we're going to leave you there for 7 weeks and we want you to live how you used to live when you were young and your parents told you how to hunt and fish and gather and build your own huts and all this sort of stuff. We just just go and live how you used to. We want to see what happens to you. In 7 weeks, no more diabetes, no more heart disease. All their cholesterol markers fell. All their lipid markers fell. Their insulin resistance improved. They weren't obese anymore. All the weight shed off them. And that was just from very simple lifestyle change in 7 weeks. So I think anything's possible.
Wow. Yeah, so it's all to say that while living in this urban jungle, we can still survive and really thrive in our lives. We just need to find those tactile tools that we can use for ourselves.
I'm not saying we have to go back and live like cavemen.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. But
can we just do simple things? Can we connect with local farmers, eat local seasonal fresh food? Can we start wearing natural fibers on our body? Can we spend more time outside? Can we do some of the inner work? Can we start thinking about building our dwellings with natural building material?
Yeah.
There's just all these simple things that we can do, which I think are going to have a major impact.
Yeah. And also maybe just asking ourselves, right, which color would I like to wear today? Maybe it's a red because I need some more energy. Maybe it's blue because I need to just relax and de-stress and calm myself. So I think certain such practices are phenomenal and fundamental to us that I think it's high time that we realize it now.
Yeah. Just going back to our basics, connecting with our essence, our intuition, consciousness, and just living close.
Yeah, I mean, in the supermarket the other day, I saw a pineapple. Now, it's not something like, it's just a fruit. It's only a pineapple. But I could see it like with an aura. And it was calling to me. And then I was like, Arjun, I need to buy this. And then after that, I had a very nice elimination. So I felt like, my body was calling for it. And I just heard it and I did exactly what it wanted me to do. And I feel fantastic afterwards. So it's with intuitive eating. So the more and more we get in touch with all of these things, I don't even think people need practitioners like us because they themselves are doctors for themselves, right?
So all the answers are out there and we have Daniel as a living example of that.
Well, it's a really important point that you bring up. We don't need health professionals. We don't need the health practitioners. We don't. If you look at all those tribes people, when they went and connected with him and they did the research on them and they were looking at their health, they didn't need hospitals. And we look at them and go, well, they didn't have hospitals and they didn't have drugs and they didn't have surgery and they didn't have all this stuff. They're in the dark ages. They didn't need it.
Yeah.
It wasn't a requirement. And I mean, even like just remarkable stories of people getting severely injured, severe wounds, traumatic injuries that healed by themselves in the matter of weeks, documented in the medical literature. They didn't have antibiotics. They didn't. In some of these wounds, they were rubbing like mud from pig's wallows in there and all this sorts of stuff that you would say, well, it's going to cause infections. But one lady got impaled by a spear in a spearing raid. And her tribe's people just cut it off back and front. They left the spear inside her. They rubbed mud into it and they put her in a hammock for 2 weeks. After 2 weeks, she gets out and she bends over to harvest some like root vegetables. And the rest of the spear just falls out. And then it closes over and she's fine. No surgery, no antibiotics, nothing, no infection. And the medical doctors are going, how is this possible? How did she not get an infection?
Yeah.
Like the human body is amazing. It really is. We've become so disconnected.
Yeah.
It's beyond belief.
Yeah, absolutely. And with that, it was so amazing to have you. This was such an amazing conversation and an eye-opener and a reminder for so many of us. And I think today is also, after listening to this episode, I feel every listener should at least take one. They should be motivated to start making changes, like step by step. What is the first thing, like, what is the first change I can do that will put me in rhythm with my inner self and with nature outside of me?
Yeah, as small as it could be, but something that's doable and they stay consistent with.
Yeah. And I'll also link Daniel's website in the show notes. And his book is highly recommended as well. And once again, Daniel, thank you so much for being on the show. It was so amazing.
Thank you.
you.
Wonderful conversation. Thank you so much.
It is our pleasure. So, to all our listeners, take care, and we'll see you in the next episode.
Bye.
Bye.